History is rated R. It's not PG. It's not PG. Now, do we keep it age appropriate? Yes. But we owe it to the children we teach and their families and the communities we teach in to give them the facts and let them decide whether something was good or bad.
North Carolina's new social studies framework, more inclusive or indoctrination? This is the Politics Podcast from WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Glad to have you along. History is written by the victors, or so the adage goes. The old saying is certainly a simplification, but at its core alludes to an enduring dilemma almost every community faces. Who gets to cultivate the stories of our past, and whose voices, narratives, and experiences are excluded from the process? The victors play an outsized role in charting our past. So too do old white men. For many of us, our perspective of history began and grew in the classroom. Teachers and textbooks taught us who did what, when, how it happened, and sometimes why. This as we formed opinions on America's complicated legacies. But what is taught and how people teach it has recently come into the spotlight in North Carolina. In February, the State Board of Education approved new standards for social studies in K-12 public schools. The approval comes after years of writing, reviewing, and revising the proposed standards. The new standards emphasize that teachers incorporate discussions about racism and equality and the viewpoints of marginalized communities within the classroom. They're intended to be a roadmap of sorts for how educators at every grade level teach about this country's complex history.
We have to wrestle as a nation with these things have happened, and no, they're not all positive. And no, they don't always feel good to talk about and learn about, but imagine living them.
Mariah Morris is the 2019 North Carolina Teacher of the Year.
And who am I to say, as a white female, whether it's appropriate or not to learn these things? Because these truths are real to our students, and they deserve to know about them.
Morris is also an advisor to the State Board of Education. She currently serves as the Innovation and Special Projects Coordinator for Moore County Schools. That county sits about an hour southwest of the Triangle. Morris shared some details on what exactly the new standards might look like in practice.
In these new standards, there's a large emphasis on the inquiry strand, and that means that we're not telling students what to think, but we're teaching students how to access information and how to help them form their own opinions about the material. So instead of teaching them that the Civil War started, because of X, Y, or Z, we are teaching them how to look at different primary and secondary sources involving the Civil War. We're looking at how to teach them about the multiple perspectives of who was involved in the Civil War and then use that data to form their own opinions. And that's a huge shift. The other thing that's different about these standards is we're more specific with the multiple perspectives that we're asking teachers to teach. So in the 2010 standards, we might have said that students will look at multiple standards to look at turning points in the 19th century. Now we're going to actually specifically name the different perspectives that we want our students to look at. How are our minority populations experiencing this different historical moment?
Here's a little background on how these social studies standards came to be and what they mean for a classroom. Board of Education policy requires each subject's standards to be reviewed every 5 to 7 years. The social studies standards in particular went under review in the wake of a 2019 state law requiring the consolidation of 2 high school American history courses into 1 in order to make way for a new personal finance class. The new social studies standards are set to take effect this fall. The standards are not the same as a new curriculum. The Department of Public Instruction works with educators to write the standards, and the Board of Education votes on them. Then, it's up to each school district to incorporate them into their respective curriculum. DPI also offers material called unpacking documents. This is to help guide the districts. Here again is Morris.
Every teacher has to have that space to be able to create their own curriculum choices and lesson planning to individualize it. So there's this push and pull between saying exactly what we have to teach and then allowing that space for teachers to make it their own.
But these new guidelines didn't pass the board with flying colors. The group voted 7-5 to approve them. Throughout the review process, critics argued that the standards painted too negative a picture of the United States. Amy White is a member of the Board of Education who shared her perspective during a January meeting.
I think the question that we need to be asking ourselves is about the use of the word framework, and do these standards fall under the framework and the basic understanding that the United States of America and North Carolina is a great nation and a great state? Do you believe that? And do you think that the teachers who teach in our classroom should be promoting America as the greatest nation on this earth? And I believe that we should.
After that meeting, three key phrases were changed. Systemic racism, systemic discrimination, and gender identity became, more simply, racism, discrimination, and identity. The final draft has a glossary of terms that lists specific identities, including gender identity. Behind the push to change these terms was arguably the standard's most vocal critic, Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson. Robinson, a Republican, claims there is an increasing amount of, quote, indoctrination, close quote, happening in the classroom. He recently launched a website for people to report such incidents. Robinson joined the Politics Podcast back in February, and the new social studies standards, of course, came up.
Here's the thing, and I think, and I hate to say this, but I think these things have been crafted intentionally this way. What I'm most opposed to is the tone of the standards themselves. I keep saying this over and over again, and there are a lot of people on the other side who don't agree with me on this, but the tone is very negative toward our country. It's pointed out that, you know, it always seems to be pointing to the fact that our nation is racist, that our system is racist, not pointing out that there was racism in our past and that we did overcome it using our system, but that our nation is systemically racist. That's the problem that I have with the standards, that they're written in a way that allows people to teach in the classroom that this nation is systemically racist. And I am diametrically opposed to that. I am not, as some people have said, I am not opposed to teaching about the bad things that have happened in our history. In fact, I think that we need to do a deep dive into the bad things that have happened in our past. Slavery being chief among them, Jim Crow being chief among them. We need to understand how those systems were allowed to happen in our nation, why they lasted so long, the impact that they had. But at the end of the day, we need to teach that through the American system of government, our exceptional system of government, we were able to use our system. We didn't have to create a new system. We used our very system of government to destroy those things. And I just didn't see that tone present in the standards that we have. And I think they're going to be used for negative purposes.
Teachers at all these different grade levels want it to be more inclusive. So it's like, what does that tell you as a parent? What does that tell you as a legislator? As a State Board of Education member, what does that tell you? It tells you that people want to teach real American history.
Meet Rodney D. Pierce.
History is rated R. It's not PG. It's not PG. Now, do we keep it age appropriate? Yes. But we owe it to the children we teach and their families and the communities we teach in to give them the facts and let them decide whether something was good or bad.
Pierce is a social studies teacher at Red Oak Middle School in Nash County in eastern North Carolina.
This is my second year teaching there, and I've been teaching as a whole. I've been in the classroom. This is my sixth year.
A few years ago, Pierce got word that the state was reviewing its social studies standards.
DPI sends out an email or gets the information out to social studies teachers in the state saying, hey, you know, this was like 2018, 2019. Hey, we're going to redo the social studies standards. If you're interested in being a writer, you can apply. If you're interested in being a reviewer, you can apply. And so I'm sitting there saying to myself, you know what? I wouldn't mind doing that.
So Pierce applied to be a writer for the new standards. And a few months later, he received an update that he'd been selected for the 8th grade social studies writing team.
And so we go to Raleigh and we meet, and it's a team of four, myself and three Caucasian women. And so I knew one of them, but I didn't know the other two. And so, you know, she and I are talking because we know each other and we've been in workshops together and we know each other's work. You know, we were sitting there listening to the presentation from DPI, and they were like, okay, now you guys can really, really talk to each other and see what directions you want to go in. And if you have any questions, we'll come over to your table and talk to you. And the young ladies and I sat down and we talked, and we just made the conscious decision that, you know, we're going to be inclusive in terms of North Carolina and American history. We're going to tell as many stories from as many different perspectives, from as many different backgrounds as we can, so that students will learn the whole of American history and not just what this group might want it to learn and not just what this group might want it to learn. We're going to present those opposing viewpoints, but we're going to make sure as many viewpoints as we can get in here, as many stories as we can get in here, are in here. And so that's the approach that we took.
So if that's the top line, if that's the approach, I want you to go next level for me. And I want you to tell me if you are pulling on your own experiences, books that you've read, people in your community, how did you then narrow it down a little bit and approach this, I would imagine, even if this is your field of specialty, a fairly challenging task to go at recultivating, rewriting the standards. Where did you go? Once you had the philosophy, then what?
Okay, so you look at the old standards and you have them as your guide, and you say, okay, how can we improve upon what's already been done? What steps do we take? How can we make this more inclusive? How can we open this up so that more stories can be told? Then you start thinking, okay, what stories do we know of that we want to tell? For example, if we're talking about the Civil War, we have to include the narrative of the aristocracy. We have to include the narrative of the abolitionist. We have to include the narrative of the slaveholders. We have to include the narrative of the enslaved. And when we fast forward, we have to include the narrative of the lost cause. We have to include the narrative of the heritage versus hate. We have to include all of that, because when these kids get out here, we got to make sure that they understand. This is why this group of people feel so passionately about this. This is why this group of people feel so passionately about it. This is why they're both on the sidewalks at this monument yelling and screaming at each other with signs and posters and T-shirts and buttons, and some of them got guns. And I'm sitting here watching it. I don't want a kid who comes through my classroom or who is using the standards that I worked on, where a teacher says, I didn't get to teach that kid that, or I didn't have any direction from the standards to teach that kid or that young man or young lady, so that they would understand what's going on when they read these kinds of stories.
What was missing in the old standards? What was the biggest glaring omission? What were you not able to utilize in your teaching that teachers are now able to include in the standards, or are now able to include because they're within the standards?
Well, the thing that sticks out to me that we used was we included a word that I had never seen in my years of teaching in the 8th grade social studies standards. We included the word injustice. That's something that was not in any other. And then when we submitted our first draft, that was not in any other grade levels standards, but ours, 8th grade. Also, I don't think enough emphasis was put on resilience, resistance, things like that. Those are the types of things we wanted to talk about, because a lot of times when you're talking about the history of marginalized groups in America, people tend to teach it from a position of victimhood. You know, oh, they're so downtrodden, they're getting beat up, they're being victimized. And it's like, no, not all of them. Some of them fought back. Some of them had guns, you know, and they had shootouts with people. There was a story in my own community I learned through my own research, where a gentleman back in 1966 during a Klan rally shot a couple of Klansmen as they were setting up a cross. Now, a student would not learn that unless they were in Mr. Pierce's classroom. But on a statewide scale, I could include in the standard, you know, I could talk about that story of resistance. And then in the unpacking documents, which I'm also helping work on with DPI. Okay, well, how can I teach this story of resistance? I can use the story of Robert F. Williams and the Black Guard in Monroe, North Carolina, down there in Union County. And at the same time I'm talking about Robert F. Williams in Union County, I can also teach a student, this is also the birthplace of Jesse Helms, where his father served as the police chief and the fire chief of Monroe, where Robert F. Williams as a young man witnessed Jesse Helms' father as the police chief manhandle a Black woman to the point her skirt was flying over her head and took her to jail, and how that had a traumatic effect on who he became as a young man. So I can tie all those narratives into that story of resistance, and I can give you the narrative and the story of a Jesse Helms. And I can tell you about Robert F. Williams, who are on very, very different sides of the spectrum, but came out of the same county.
We have a Lieutenant Governor, Mark Robinson, this newly elected Republican who has been, for my money, probably the most outspoken against the new standards. There certainly have been other critics, but he probably has the most prominent post at this point. He has called it anti-American. He has called it an indoctrination. He has been fervently against these standards. What do you say to him, and what do you say to others that say, all right, American history might be rated R, but we can't be teaching an anti-American platform?
Come to my classroom. Come to my classroom. Come to my classroom and teach me how I'm supposed to do my job. Or maybe you should be quiet, go over there in the corner and sit down and listen to me, because you just might learn something. I respect Lieutenant Governor Robinson's position. I respect the fact of what he overcame in his background to become where he's to get to where he's at, especially as a Black American man. I respect that. I have actually reached out to his scheduler. I haven't talked to him in a couple of months because everything's been kind of crazy with the reopening stuff. But I was actually trying to work on getting him to come and speak to my students, because I thought that it was very important that students of all races and ethnicities see a Black man other than Barack Obama in a position of authority in state government. You know, the narrative, especially as it pertains to Black American men throughout American history and in contemporary history, is one that's very negative. So, you know, not only by my presence and what I do every day am I trying to destroy that narrative, but I want to get people in the classroom that destroy that narrative in front of my students. But if you want to debate history, bring it on. Bring it on. I'm game. Because it's getting to a point where it's like, you don't trust us to do our job. If you don't trust me to do my job, come show me how it's supposed to be done.
Here's just a little bit more additional context about the educational landscape in North Carolina. Nearly 80% of public school teachers across the state are white. Meanwhile, students of color make up more than half of the total K-12 public school population.
There's a demographic and a sociological disconnect. And all the data, all the research shows that students of every hue benefit from diverse teaching workforces.
How much do these standards really matter? Do these standards really put us down a path that's going to fundamentally change how we're teaching our history? Or is this really about giving teachers an opportunity, and it's ultimately up to the teachers to move forward? I guess concisely, do you think that this is really going to bring about a change in the classroom, or do you have some skepticism?
I mean, you do have a little skepticism. James Baldwin says, you know, I have to be an optimist because I'm alive. That's one of his quotes. And I have to be an optimist. Yes, there are going to be teachers who actually put this into practice. It's a step in the right direction, but it goes back to legislators passing bills and people like Lieutenant Governor Robinson starting task forces to try to police the instruction that happens in the classroom. Because when it comes to people like me, it doesn't intimidate me. It doesn't scare me. But it may scare that young lady or that young man who wants to teach that, but is afraid. They're afraid that a parent is going to complain, that they're going to get in trouble with their administrator, that the board is not going to renew their contract. Because at the end of the day, as teachers, you know, I don't want to say this, but it's kind of like, you know, we all we got. You know, we have to have each other's backs so that, you know, people who want to teach this kind of thing and people who need to be in a position to take care of themselves and feed their families can do their job and are not afraid to broach these topics.
To get a better understanding about how North Carolina's social studies standards compare to other states, I spoke with Tina Hefner, a professor in the Department of Middle, Secondary, and K-12 Education at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte.
I also have the privilege of being the past president of the National Council for the Social Studies.
I asked Hefner if we've seen this divisiveness bubble up before with social studies as an educational or perhaps ideological battleground.
Social studies standards have always been contentious. I mean, if you look at the history of the standards in Texas, I mean, the shift between a conservative Board of Education versus a Republican and Democrat shift of the Board of Education in Texas, the standards have been used as a political means to promote interest of individual groups or interest of political parties. So, and social studies seems to be the most common ground for where those political interests surface and become most prevalent and most visible. But it's always been contentious.
Hefner was quick to point out that history is not the only pillar to teaching social studies. There are three more primary disciplines: economics, civics, and geography. And she says, at their core, the new standards are not much different from the old ones.
But they do have, I think, a little shift or a shift toward a critical lens of helping us understand, you know, who benefits from our society, who has less opportunity within our society, and also just, you know, our cultural and religious and personal identity differences and how that shapes how we think and perceive the world in which we live.
Unfortunately, from my perspective, we are certainly in this binary moment where everything is your team or my team, this or that, right or wrong. I wonder what you... how you feel about this? Like, are you at a point where you're like, this is a seminal moment, this is a great moment for progress, this is more routine? Like, are you stressed out about it? Are you intrigued to see what happens? Are you fascinated? Are you optimistic? Like, where are you personally with this debate in North Carolina right now?
So I've referred to this as our Sputnik moment. And partly because my own research, I've looked at the marginalization of social studies. And social studies has been pushed the periphery. It has fewer than 15 minutes a day that students have. And in many states, students don't even, like Rhode Island, students don't even have access to civics education. And social studies is a forgotten subject. It's lived on the periphery, particularly civics education as a whole across our nation. This isn't just a North Carolina issue. This is a national trend that my colleague Paul Fitchett and I have documented empirically. And it has ramifications because our students have little knowledge of our institutions, have little knowledge of American history. They have little knowledge of our civic processes. And as a result, we've created a civic empowerment gap. So how I feel about it personally is we're at a critical precipice of making a decision. Do we value civic education for our youth? Should they be educated in our systems? And how committed are we as a society to making that an equitable footing to reading, writing, and mathematics? Those are key skills. It's easy to sit on the periphery and to listen to what others think about the standards. I would encourage people to read the standards themselves and to really look for how the standards are presented. There are certain pieces that are being lifted out and being politicized, but there's a lot more to the standards that really promote, you know, the common American identity. So look at the standards. Look at the standards before you go critiquing or interpreting or thinking that the standards say something. Really look and read what they actually say. And then also trust teachers.
This episode of the Politics Podcast was produced by Audio Jackknife, Charlie Shelton Ormond. Your presence here, as always, is appreciated. You, as part of our audience, remain an integral part of what we do. So here's my occasional nudge. Email, tweet, track me down to share what you like or dislike about this program. What are you not hearing in this space that you would like to? Who are you interested in hearing from in the form of an extended conversation that perhaps we haven't had ever before or in a while? Thanks for supporting public media with your ears, your dollars, maybe both. Remember to explore the feeds of Embodied, Tested, and Dating Well Gray, all from WUNC. We'll join you again Friday for a review of some of what happened in North Carolina politics. I'm Jeff, wishing my son Milo a happy third birthday.